Filipino dramatic. Only because I think it's so rich. It's so rich and it's so interesting. And why not? Let's just share that with the world.
I think, yes, I think that's what makes it, partially what makes this culture so vibrant and colorful. I mean, maybe it has to be that way because you need drama to make loud noise.
Hello and welcome to the Mackerel Podcast, where we talk about culture, literature, and other interesting things. My name is Carolyn Wee, and greetings from Singapore. If you missed my preamble to this series of three conversations that we've entitled, How Are Things on Your Island?, allow me to briefly run through it again. This is a series of three conversations that are about the coronavirus and not about the coronavirus, because we're both compelled and repelled by it. It's a shared experience that none of us can ignore, although some of us have managed to dodge its angry, indiscriminate sweep. I'm one of the dodgers, and for that, I am thankful. And I think that it is always necessary to understand why I should be thankful. I don't mean the false modesty or hashtag feeling blessed sort of thankful. I have no patience for that brand of inauthenticity. Rather, I mean a more introspective examination of everything that has gone right in the last 3 months, along with everything that has gone bloody belly up at the same time. And then, more important, moving on from that introspection and actually getting shit done. Mindfulness is great and all, but like licorice ribbons or luncheon meat or social media, too much will make you sick and could even kill you. This series of three conversations focuses on being on an island. Well, in a situation such as this global pandemic that we're in, what could be more perfect than being on an island? Cut off from COVIDiots and with plenty of sunshine and sand between your toes and beautiful sunsets to see you through the madness? It depends on which island you're on. I might not be stranded in the hyper-dramatic sense of the word, but I do feel like I am. A lot. Because COVIDiots abound. And there are no hills to head for. There are no great outdoors from which to draw renewed energy. The malls are as great outdoors as it gets in Singapore. And even those have been shut since we went into lockdown on the 7th of April. So, I'm on an island. Yes, technically Singapore is an island. And I'm curious to know how others on actual islands are coping. In our following two episodes, we'll be speaking with Ashley Sanderson on Gili Trawangan in Indonesia. Ashley is a horse riding instructor extraordinaire, and she and her rescue kitten Batty will tell us a thing or two about creating structure in their day and the secret to eternal life. We'll also be speaking with artist and ideas factory Yen Pang, with whom the Mackerel team regularly shoots the breeze here in Singapore. But for now, in the first of these conversations, I'm speaking with Michelle Villarosa, who is currently on the island of Siargao in the Philippines. Michelle practices alternative healing and leads guided meditations. And here's what she has to say about how she is using her skills to help herself and others to stave off anxiety. And before we begin, I'd like to apologize if the recording isn't always seamless. But still, God bless technology.
My name is Michelle Villarosa. I always find it interesting when somebody asks where I'm from because it's not such an easy way to answer. I was born in Canada. I live in Singapore. I'm stranded in the Philippines and making my way to the Philippines to move here. So I also feel like recently who I am has been in a complete transition. So that has also been an interesting question that I receive. I would say that I am just me exploring life with awe and kindness, and in the process, answering to the call of bringing uplift into people's lives in various ways, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And so So why I'm here, I took my family here back in March to just be on a vacation and show them the beautiful island of Siargao. And then, of course,
and maybe this is where also we need to just sort of specify that your family, meaning your parents, I just wanted to go back to what you were saying earlier about who you are, as in, you know, the last couple of months also has sent you on that journey, because ethnically you are Filipino.
Correct. Correct. Yes. Mm. Thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, I feel this draw coming back to the Philippines because ethnically I am Filipino. I am Canadian Filipino. So to be able to bring my mom and dad back here and show them where I'm going to be laying in some deeper roots meant a lot. What we walked into, though, was definitely unexpected. We arrived a day before lockdown here, and we're here. And we're just laying roots a little bit earlier than I had expected, and they're laying roots even though they weren't expecting. So
how are you planning to lay roots on Siargao?
So Eric and I, my husband Eric and I, we've been visiting Siargao for a number of years, and we fell in love with this place. It's magical. I mean, there's so much soul and vibrancy, so much abundance. You're surrounded by nature. You feel alive. You can't help but feel alive. Lots of warm community. So I think it was back in 2018, one of the dreams we had was to live in a different country or to have land in a different country. And the opportunity came up that I received citizenship here in the Philippines. And then that led to an idea kind of later down the road to open up a business here in the Philippines. And that's transcended into something else. So how we're laying roots here is we are building a wellness space on the island of Siargao. And we are right now actually building a home, a personal home first. I was actually supposed to come here until the fall to really settle down, you know, live here full time and kind of go back and forth between Singapore and Vancouver. So mentally, I had thought, okay, I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to be okay with making a big jump and leap in the fall. But here I am finding myself doing this now. But that's how we're rooting. That's where, how we're going to be rooting here. Then there's other ways of rooting, right? Yeah. There's so many different ways to look at what rooting means. Physically rooting, yeah, that's one. But then there's also the emotional, the spiritual, the community rooting, all of that. So that's kind of flowing as the days go. Organically, right. I'd say. Yeah.
Well, maybe since you have mentioned community and you've picked Siargao, and I love the fact that we've got the roosters crowing in the background. Yes. Like, yes, people, she really is on an island.
They're not shy.
No, they're not at all. And they crow at all hours of the day, by the way. Roosters are quite lousy at keeping time, actually.
They are. They're overachievers. I'm a rooster.
There you go. You were meant for, you and the island were meant to be together.
I know.
But speaking of community, could you tell us a little bit more about Siargao? Because I don't think, for the benefit of those who don't know very much about Siargao, where it is even.
Yeah, absolutely. So Siargao is located in the Philippines in the southeast. It's about an hour if you were to fly from Manila. And actually, only recently, I would say in the last 5-6 years, have you been able to fly to Siargao. Before then, it was taking long, you know, 15-hour ferry boats and open, almost open waters. But the island itself is kind of teardrop shape, tropical island. It is full of gorgeous white sand, untouched beaches, beautiful coral, amazingly azure blue waters, crystal clear. And then you also have this, like, I'm just looking out at this backdrop beside me, mountains and hills of jungle, just nature, you know, beaming out of every nook and cranny and crevice possible. There's a lot of life here. Siargao was made sort of famous for its surfing. So it would be the capital of surfing in the Philippines. But there's so much more here. I do surf. I'm pretty lousy at it, and the water kind of scares me. But I still love going into it. But there are other things that are drawing me more, and I think other people as well, like the waterfalls, the rock pools, hiking in the lush jungle. But what really, really draws me in to this island, and I think what captured my heart back in 2017 and continues to, is the community. So I don't know how many Filipinos you know. I think you have a few Filipino friends. And as you probably are aware, they're very warm. The Filipino culture is very inviting. It's, instead of the individual, it's the community. So there are these smaller, what are called barangays, which are villages, and they're peppered throughout the island. And you really have this sense of togetherness, community, people are watching each other's back. Everybody knows each other. They're sharing food, they're sharing laughs. And it's been even more prominent during pandemic time when resources, work, things like this have been limited. I would say the biggest, from what I've noticed, the biggest product or economy here would be certainly tourism. Siargao was rated the number one island back in 2019. Tourism is number one. Then there's also crops. It's filled, you know, until you cannot see with coconuts. So a lot of coconut
Well, product. And if I'd like to interrupt you here, but really, Michelle is not kidding, okay? So this is not a desert island. No.
Yeah, no. Oh my gosh, no.
And to your point about lush jungles and the bounty of the universe, I mean, this place has got like coconuts and bananas and avocados just coming out their ears.
Really? And even in places where you don't think things should be growing, like in the sand, there are things growing in the sand.
Right. What is growing in the sand? I'm just curious.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, but I know them as gooseberries. Do you know they're kind of round,
small
cherry tomato-like? Yeah. So my host mom, Auntie Malin, was like, hey, Michelle, come here. We call this our candy. And she's like, you've got all of this peppered on the beach in front of the property. And she kept on like popping them into my hand and just like handfuls of this beautiful, delicious, kind of sweet, salty berry, I guess. I think it's salty too because it's close to the ocean. She even was shocked to find it on the beach. Those bushes aren't normally growing in sand. Nothing really grows in sand. Except here.
Yeah, so it's that idyllic place, and the community makes a difference. The roosters make a difference. And what can you tell us about the harmony or the bounty that you've experienced so far, having been trapped on the island? Trapped. In the commas.
I know. I hate using that word stranded because I feel like it's not explaining the situation accurately because I am stranded. I cannot leave the island. And there's all these variables that make it very challenging to even plan anything around that. But on the other hand, we're talking about the bounty of, you know, the universe, the abundance on the island and the gifts. It's plentiful. My parents and I came here, we packed for 6 days. So in some respect, we don't have anything on some level of thinking, right? Mm. But interesting to be here, not having quote unquote anything, but we're filled with so much joy every day. Like, there's just so much food everywhere you go because there are farms throughout the island. They can grow their own crops, and it's such a variety, all kinds of fruits, gooseberries, avocados. Your grocery store not only is the jungle, but it's also the ocean, tons of beautiful fish. I actually just learned the other day that there's a deep trench only a few meters away from the shoreline. And that just is wild to me to think that there's a, I think it's a 7 kilometer trench just from eye's view away. So there's the, I know, so it's kind of like, what? Well, yeah.
And you didn't know that before. You didn't know that before you spent an extended time on the island.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, up until now, I've been spending, you know, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, but you only get to scratch the surface. And every time you scratch a little bit more. But now, having been here for 2.5 months, really immersing in the life here and in the intricacies of daily being and how other people are living, then I'm learning about all these things. And just quite, you know, you're also, you have more questions. You're asking, you have more time to ask. You have the fortunate connections with our host family and our neighbors and, you know, being able to ask them for years. What is this plant? Why are the waves breaking there? What are you catching in the ocean?
And speaking of fortunate connections, having only packed for 6 days, like you said, clothes aside, there were also implements and tools of daily life that we've all just grown so accustomed to, you know, things like laptops, for example. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your Swedish laptop.
yes. Oh, there's been a lot of examples of this. A laptop, chocolate cake, yoga mats, cats being delivered here. yes.
Care packages, yes.
Care packages. You just kind of put it out, the universe, it comes. But yeah, the lab, that's funny. So let's see, about the first few weeks of quarantine, not being able to do anything, really didn't do anything. Kind of just settled in, went inward, did a lot of reading, not a lot. But then after a while, once we kind of adapted and settled in, I felt more creative. You know, being connected to nature and being in silent space with myself, I felt this pulse to create, make things, write things, do things, particularly write. And I had just stumbled upon an opportunity to do some writing for a lifestyle website. And I jumped on board. Yes, absolutely. You know, this is the perfect time. I've got, you know, a lot
loads
of inspiration,
time on your head.
Tons of time, loads of time. Although this month I feel like, where's the time going? And so I thought, I've committed to this, but I only have my little iPhone. And I actually really don't like typing on my iPhone. I'm really bad at replying to text messages and things. I just don't like.
No, but who does? I mean, it's a stress on your thumbs and also your eyes. You know, your eyeballs. It's hard.
Oh yeah.
You're not alone.
Yes, and the first, I don't know if you had this experience, but when I was in the first few weeks of quarantine, I definitely, with my eyes were glued to the screen. My left eye twitched for a week.
Oh my God.
it was really sad. So here I am thinking, okay, I got to type all, you know, these like pieces and this content on my phone. It'd be really great to have a laptop. So I kid you not, the next day I'm hanging out with my girlfriend that I met a few months back, my recent trip. And I was telling her how I have this opportunity that landed on my lap. I'm going to do some writing. It's really inspiring me. But I have to, you know, write on my iPhone, which is, it's fine. And she goes, and I'm not even going to try to do a Swedish accent, because it's just going to be brutal. But she's like, I have a laptop. I'm like, okay. She said, you use it. Here, I'll give it to you. I'm like, what? she said, I don't even use it right now. I'm not working right now. And honestly, when I look at that laptop, it angers me, because the last time I used it, I was in school, and that was not the greatest situation. So you would be doing me a favor, yeah, if you took it away from my eyes, from my vision. But it came to me, and so very...
And that was that.
That was that. It was so simple, and I continually ask her, like, hey, do you need it back? She's like, no, I don't want to look at it. But she's so gracious to gift it to me or lend it to me for the time that I'm here. But yeah, so I'm writing. But I soon realized that, and I should have thought about this before, but I soon realized that, oh yeah, it's in Swedish.
The key bot's in Swedish.
Yeah. So I didn't really know, other than trips to IKEA, what Swedish writing is like. You know, these accents and dots over the O and the A. I don't really know what that sounds like.
Yeah, and umlauts and all.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're typing, it's just so automatic and so robotic in a way. It's just a natural thing that flows through your fingers until you misstep and you miswrite. And I was noticing, actually, the first thing that happened was, you know, you do the happy face, the colon, the parentheses. Well, my happy faces would be like Picasso-style happy faces. The nose is somewhere else. The eyes are somewhere else, and the lips
and they don't look
too
happy.
Yeah. So I became much more mindful, actually, using the Swedish laptop. But later down the road, once I kind of got the groove for it, I started guiding some meditations, or I had the opportunity. I came to some decent, reliable internet, and I'm going to get back on to guiding meditations online, which is something that I had started doing in Singapore. I think I started this in September of last year. And I was scheduling these on Zoom, realizing that it's, again, you know, this Swedish reminder comes up, and everything was booked under Stockholm time, under that time zone, and it kind of messed things up. But what happened in the process of, you know, this, it sounds like such a trivial thing, this mix up of this time zone and having to switch it to Singapore time or Manila time or what, Vancouver time. It made me think, you know, I had been so much in my own little bubble, in my own little world. Yes, I would have conversations with friends, but not that much, because I didn't have very good internet until soon after the laptop came. But changing these time zones reminded me of other parts of the world. In a way, it reconnected me to thinking outside of my little world. And understandably, for anybody, it's so sharp focus, because we're going through such an immediate, drastic shift and change. We're having to adapt in our own world before we can, you know, support other people physically.
Energetically and physically, yeah.
Digitally, physically.
Swedishly. It's about how you went inward. And I imagine that the first couple of weeks, maybe even the first month, must have been quite hard, as it has been for everyone, just trying to, you know, as you say, just sort of like make sense of things and figure their way across. So, yeah. You went inward. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then maybe how eventually you achieved some kind of equilibrium?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a topic that I've found interesting to talk about with other people, because it's so different with everyone going inward. For some, it may be quite easy. For others, it might be the worst thing in their life at that moment, or feeling so, right?
Yeah.
When we arrived here, it was actually, when we arrived in Siargao, the very first day we were placed in quarantine. And so the process of going inward was a little bit rocky in the beginning, because here we are being forced. I don't like being forced. I don't like being, I just don't like that. I don't like being controlled.
Compelled to do anything.
Exactly. Especially coming here where you feel, where you're supposed to feel free. Anyway, I actually honestly felt angry. I felt, this is ridiculous. Okay, so I've come a long way, but I felt, this is ridiculous. You know, nobody has coronavirus here. I am just going to the house to check on the build, which is a 5-minute bike ride away. Why are you asking me to stay quarantined for 2 weeks, not being able to leave the house, not being able to fend for myself, having to rely on other people? I just was so irate by it. And I mean, at the time too, I didn't realize how serious this pandemic was and the severity of it all took some time. So, you know, going from there and then easing a little by little, adjusting, being okay with certain things. I think that is one of the hardest parts is relinquishing control, right? Relinquishing control with plans that you have, letting go of plans, not being able to move to the own beat of your drum in your mental way of being, I think.
To go through that checklist, your to-do list, pop, right?
Yes.
Tick them off one at a time.
Yes, this isn't how it was supposed to be. But little by little, you let go and you accept what's happening. At least that's the process that I was going through. And you feel that by letting go, it becomes easier. You're less angry, openness mm-hmm. to understand. You have more compassion for the things that are happening around you. You look outside of your own little bubble and you know what? It's okay. So it was layer by layer going through this process and then coming back to my center or my own peace. We kind of, when we have these emotional situations or physical situations, mm-hmm. brings us outside of our peace for a moment or a long moment, and then we come back into. So it's like, I think of it like an elastic band in that it stretches out erratically and then it can come back to a place of groundedness. So going inward for me, once I surrendered, once I let go and accepted what was going on day by day, I did a lot of meditation. I spent a lot of time back into my regular routine, which is something I needed actually, to start my morning with meditation, to end my day with meditation, to have moments of mindful breath in the middle of the day, to stop and notice that the birds are fluttering, that the butterflies are visiting, that, you know, the life, different pieces of life are happening all around me. Messages in that. Yeah. That was the inward journey.
I'm hoping that, you know, your experiences are helpful to anybody who's listening, because it's a shared experience. I think one thing that we can say about the pandemic is that, my gosh, everybody's feeling it, right? For the first time in our lifetimes, at least, everyone's feeling this. So what sort of recommendations or advice do you have for people in terms of how to deal with this, especially if they're still stuck looking inward?
I would say one of the most powerful things, yes, go inward, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But I think knowing that you're not alone, knowing that you're not, you know, forgotten, knowing that you are loved, knowing that you will be okay. And as humans, our superpower is to connect. And if you have the means to connect, do reach out to people and talk, because that connection is very powerful. And then going inward might be rocky in the beginning if we are not used to, I mean, not a lot of people are, right? If we have a regular job, we're constantly in our mind, working, busy, 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 action, action, action. So we don't have the opportunity to go in and be still. So it might be a little bit rocky in the beginning, but I'd say be gentle with yourself, allow and observe any sensations, and let it be okay. Be the observer, notice what comes up and say, hey, yeah, you know, this is how I'm feeling right now. I'm just going to let it move through me. This is not who I am. It's an emotion that's passing through. And by experiencing life like that, you're already, you know, going inward. You're already opening yourself up to a deeper connection within, and just bringing your breath into it. When I started with my meditation practice, I meditated for 3 minutes, and that was a rocky 3 minutes. So just being okay with where you're at, allow the heart and the body to speak.
But you know, or looking inward is scary, which is why like silent retreats scare people, because that's when you have no distractions, you can't do anything else, you're not meant to be doing anything else but looking at yourself and talking to yourself. And yikes, so many of us don't want to know, seriously, because there's a lot of shit down there. There are lots of demons that and dragons that have to be slain, and it's just not a nice place, you know. And so it takes some doing to get there. Let's continue to speak a little bit more about your healing and your guided meditation practice, and also the services that you offer people. Because when you got to the island, obviously, just as you were packed only for 6 days, so similarly, you didn't have a laptop, you didn't have your bowls, you didn't have your tools, the tools of your trade.
Yes, no, I didn't. I didn't.
So what did you do then? Do you fashion them out of coconut shells or what?
Well, yeah, I have now, but no, in the beginning, I was stripped away of things, like my bowls, like my crystals, my essential oils, things like this. But what ends up happening when, at least for me, when these things were stripped away, is you come back to the source. You come back to what is the power. It's within you. It's not in the extra. It's not in the material thing and the structures that society has you do. It's not in what other people tell you. It's in yourself. It's in your intuition, in the listening to your heart speak. So when I was getting into meditation, I was certainly more connecting to that. But what ended up happening was two or three weeks in, a girlfriend of mine reached out. So I do energy healing. I've been doing energy healing I've been practicing and learning for the past year. And actually, when I look back, my curiosity and interest and passions in spirituality, mysticism, in the unseen kind of world has been with me since I was a child, but just only has come out much more loudly in the past 5 years. Anyway, my friend reached out to me and she was asking for advice on how to balance her chakras or how to connect with her chakras. And so I gave her some ideas and some practices she could do. But then I thought, you know what, if you're open to it, I would be happy to send you some distance healing. And distance healing isn't something that I had ever really done. I had done it in class. And actually practicing and offering energy healing, I hadn't really been doing too much of in the past, I would say, 5 months. It was more so something I was doing in class, in structured school, with curriculum and particular to it. So,
it's almost like, okay, everybody, now heal distance.
Exactly. Step one, step two, step three.
Yeah.
And I learned like this, but when I was here in the island, stripped of these things, and also with the space to move my own way and to think more intuitively, I was given this chance to do this distance healing. And I noticed when I was doing the distance healing, I let go of what I thought it was supposed to be like, and I let go of what other students experienced and how they did healing. And I just kind of let things flow through me in the way that resonated with me and that made sense to me. Someone called out to me.
Right. So you put aside the textbook.
Exactly. And the successes too, I think that also held me back, seeing, oh, this person is successful doing it this way. I should do it this way.
Right. Your best practices. And I'm not sure whether best practices...
Exactly.
I mean, of course, there are questions of ethics and honesty, but, you know, best practices in terms of healing really have to be customized, you know?
Yeah, it has to be customized. And we all come to this earth with our own gifts and our own unique skill set. And it's the purpose of why we're here. So it was a good reminder of that. I noticed when I was doing these distance healings that I was starting to see things. And this had never happened before. And I felt like, okay, I'm just going to go with this. I'm going to trust what is coming through. And so I started recording the observations I was connecting with. And because I didn't have a way to, at the time, talk to my friend, she's in a different time zone, she responded back the next day after I sent her an email with the observations. And I was seeing things that were life.
You were seeing things that were what? Sorry?
Oh, sorry. It's loud. It's raining over here. It's a bit of a monsoon. I was seeing things that were happening in her life, and I believe were messages for areas that she maybe needed to address, or cues and insights on how to support her healing journey. Because some of the things that I saw were just so in my mental mind, in my ego mind, very random. But then when she received it as a message through my voice, it resonated. She got it. She understood, you know, exactly what it meant, or it a physical item that she had been using that very day or something like that. So had I not had the time to go inward and to have this stillness and this quiet and to be stripped away of the extra.
I think you allow yourself to feel the sand between your toes. So I'm going to ask you this question, Michelle. Do you believe in magic?
I absolutely believe in magic. Gosh, there's just been so many things in my life that are, you can't explain, and feelings and sensations. Yes, we are made of magic. We are made of magic. And if we're aware to it, then you'll see it. You'll feel it.
Yeah, I'm glad you do, because I do too. And it's true. There are some things that you just cannot explain. There certainly are things that you won't find in a textbook. Or a user's manual, because that's just not where they're found. They're found in the grains of sand on the beach. They're found in that hummingbird in the nest outside your window. They're found in the auntie who teaches you how to make coconut candy.
Oh my gosh, the auntie that dances making coconut candy. It's everywhere. There's just been so many things in my life and other people's lives that have happened that cannot explain. It's in the unseen. It's in the hummingbirds that are, you know, building a nest and tweeting and tapping on my window. Oh, I just heard one right now. It's in the urchin that I stepped on, you know, in the water. Yeah, it's magic is everywhere. And we have a choice whether we want to see it or not. And if we choose to and become more aware of it, it's striking. It really is. I also find that it'll come to you more if you're open to it. That's what makes the world go around. We are made of magic. The world is made out of magic. This is our connected energy.
Because we started the conversation with you talking a little bit about Siargao and being in the Philippines, I would like to wrap up the conversation as well with a little bit more about Filipino dramatic. only because I think it's so rich. It's so rich and it's so interesting. And why not? Let's just share that with the world.
I think that's what makes it partially what makes this culture so vibrant and colorful. I mean, maybe it has to be that way because you need drama to make loud noise. I love the colorful celebrations and the festivals and their lightheartedness. It's always a joy. Every day is a joy, I feel like, in a Filipino's mind. But so it's funny though, the drama. When I think of drama, exactly, I think dun dun dun. So I'm sure you have experienced this too, but in a different way. There's so much news, right? So much news about the pandemic. It's every day. It's every hour. It's a lot.
Yeah, I'm having pandemic fatigue.
Right? It's now, instead of talking about the weather, we talk about the pandemic. And I get it. There's a lot happening, and there's some good stories and bad stories. There's a lot of fear happening there. But okay, so here, in our first home that we were staying at during quarantine, we're in quarantine. We cannot leave the house. There is a TV here.
Oh no.
I wish there wasn't a TV.
Yeah.
And my parents are eating up the news. And I'm in the shared space with them in the first, you know, week. All of us sleeping in one bedroom, by the way. And in this one space during the quarantine. And this TV is that. It's dun 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 constantly.
It's every constantly
day.
On.
It doesn't even matter what they're talking about. They could be talking about toothpaste and it's dun dun dun. But I'm trying to show my parents, like, hey, do you see that even with the simplest conversations or, you know, non-serious topics, there is this undertone of fear that is coming up through the background sound or the voice of the newscasters and things like that. And right at that moment, as I'm trying to explain to them, you know, how it is fear provoking, it goes, the sound dun 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 actually happens. Oh, did you hear that? That is exactly what I'm talking about. And they're like, no. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, oh my God.
They're so desensitized.
Really, really. So yeah, what can you do? You just laugh and you kind of go in the bathroom where it's quieter, I guess.
Oh my gosh, being stuck in a room with your... Okay, look, I yes, as much as we all, many of us love our parents, still, to be stuck in a room with your parents for 2 weeks has got to be right up there along with nightmares, lah. Come on.
Well, I should be. So the first, I would say, 5 days, I was stuck with my parents. And then we moved to a bigger place. Still in the same house, but at least I had my own bedroom. But yeah, the first 5 days, I was sharing the exact same bedroom with my parents. And it's almost like, you know, pulling the Band-Aid off so fast, you just have to deal with it because everything's coming at you. Not only now stripped away of everything and you are confined and you don't have control over anything. Even though it was hard in the beginning and the stress levels were heightened and people were exploding in their own ways, there have been a lot more moments of joy and happiness and peace being together, going through this new way of life as a family unit. Yeah, I'm truly lucky. And I know Tess has my sister who passed away a year ago, definitely has a lot to do with this, bringing us together at this time.
And amen to that. Wow.
Amen to that.
So, I mean, if any of our listeners is interested in finding out a little bit more about Shagao or even your healing and guided meditation practices and sessions that you could help them with or offer them, how can they find you other than take a plane? Because nobody can take a plane right now, Michelle. So how could they find you?
Travel at a time of non-travel. Planning without planning. Yeah, please connect. You can find me on Instagram. My profile is Coloma Villa, Coloma Villa. And you'll find all kinds of things that are things that inspire me, that I hope inspire you. The movements of the day here on the island of Shagao. I love noticing and documenting and sharing the small, tiny details up to these grandiose, you know, take the breath away moments. And I will share also my meditations. I'd love to have you online. I've been meditating with a community across across the globe every Wednesday and Friday evening. And dun, 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 well, no, see, I'm doing it.
You're Filipino. You can't help it. You can't help yourself.
A very peaceful dun dun dun. But I am creating a website to share more about healing and my healing practice. And for anybody that would like to receive healing, you can connect with me that way. Very excited to share that as well. But yeah, please
okay.
do connect.
So the website could go live by the end of the month. And don't worry, once we have that link, we'll put it up somewhere on one of our pages or something so that people can connect with you.
Awesome. Yeah. I would love that. Yeah, I'd love to be able to connect and hear, you know, also to hear other people's journeys and experiences. And if there is space to talk about what their healing journey is like, I love to listen. I love to be there.
Well, it's been a real joy listening to you, and thank you very much for giving us a little bit of a taste of life on a not so desert island.
Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing yourself and also finding a way to bridge these stories. And I know that it's touching many people in everything that you're doing.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode. Remember to tune in to the other conversations in the series, How Are Things on Your Island? If you'd like to get in touch, please send an email to hello@mackerel.life. Thanks again, and we wish you good physical and emotional health.